Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Christy Snyder. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Connie, and welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Secure Sockets Layer Basics. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, the lines will open for a question and answer session. Today's presenter is Russ Stancliffe. Russ joined the Host on Demand Level 2 team in 2005. Previously, he was an instructor and developer for WebSphere MQ. He has also been an IBM Global Services ITS Specialist for iSeries, Software Support Specialist for iSeries Client Access and Integrated Products, and an IBM System Engineer for System 36, System 38, and AS400. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Russ. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. This is a basic presentation for SSL, and this actually is for the concept of SSL. We're not going to refer to any specific communications packages or anything like that for this. I will be using a few samples, which will hopefully explain some of the concepts. I'll be using a WebSphere MQ as a sample, and you'll see that when we get to those slides. So let's continue with slide number 2, and we will start into talking about this SSL or this cryptography we're going to get into. Cryptography basically is the process of converting between readable text called plain text and unreadable form called ciphertext. When a sender, in the form of talking about communications between computers, when a sender converts the plain text message to ciphertext, this process is called encryption. And sometimes it's referred to as encipherment. The encrypted text is then transmitted to the receiver. When the receiver receives that encrypted text, it converts it back to its plain text form. This is called decryption or decipherment. This conversion basically involves a sequence of mathematical operations that change the appearance of the message during the transmission but do not affect the content of that message. And these techniques are used to ensure confidentiality and to protect messages against unauthorized viewing or eavesdropping. Because if an encrypted message is not understandable, then digital signatures are typically used, and we're going to talk about that in the next slide. However, if you'll notice on this slide, we're talking about symmetric encryption. Symmetric encryption is using a single key. It's very fast, or relatively fast, and the sender and the receiver use the same key, and that's what this slide is showing. The problem with symmetric encryption is both the sender and the receiver need the same key, so there's a problem with distributing the key. Both parties need the same key. So from symmetric encryption, let's talk about asymmetric. So we'll go to slide number 3. In asymmetric encryption, when we're looking at that, you'll notice that the sender has a public key and the receiver is using a private key. So in this technique, we're going to actually keep the key secret that the receiver is using. That's the private key. This algorithm here is using the private and public key pairs, in which case it solves the key distribution problem of between the sender and the receiver. It is slower than the symmetric key encryption, which we looked at on the previous slide, but asymmetric encryption is also part of SSL, so we're going to move into, these are components of SSL or Secure Sockets Layer. So if we go to screen number 4, you'll see that on screen number 4, when we're talking about the keys that are used for asymmetric and symmetric encryption, the asymmetric keys, there's 3 different levels. There's the 512 bits, the 768 bits, and the 1024 bits. And if you'll notice, the 512 is considered quite low strength. Whereas the 1024 bits for asymmetric is considered very high strength. This, in the asymmetric type of encryption, you'll notice that this is determining the strength of the encryption, whereas with symmetric keys, 128 bits is considered very high strength. The algorithms used with these asymmetric and the symmetric is can be either block or stream algorithms, in which case a block algorithm encrypts data by blocks. RC2 from the RCA data security uses block types of encryption. Block algorithms are usually slower than stream, however. If we talk about stream algorithms, these operate on each byte of data, and these are usually quite a bit faster than block algorithms. With that said, let's go to screen number 5, and we'll take a look at the next component of SSL, which is a message digest. Message digests are used to take the message that you're going to send, and we're going to use a hash function, or it's an algorithm actually also, a hash function to compute a message authentication code, which is actually the variable length message that was originally the message that was plain text, and we're going to run it through a hash function, which then will create a fixed length message authentication code, or some people call this a message digest. Basically, this should be very easy to compute, but very difficult to reverse compute, in which case this is used typically to send the, with the actual message, we send a message authentication code so that somebody can tell if the original message was tampered with or not, in which case, if it was tampered with, then the if they actually run the same message through the hash function again, they'll find that the message authentication code would be different if the message was tampered with. So message digests are used to check to make sure that the original message was not tampered with. And this is another part of SSL. So if we go on to screen number 6, along with our message authentication code, we're now going to add also a digital signature. A digital signature is used with a private key to encrypt the message authentication code that's used when we are creating SSL. We are going to go even further, and we're going to now include a digital signature so that when we send our message from sender to receiver, we'll have this digital signature with it with a private key, and that will now allow the receiver to decrypt the message authentication code with the sender's public key. The receiver can then recompute the message authentication code from the message received and verify that both message authentication codes are the same, in which case that will allow us to know that they match. And then the sender is verified that the message was not tampered with, and the digital signature ensures that this is the correct authentication code, message authentication code, that was sent with the original message. We go into screen number 6 now. We want to go to the point of looking at digital certificates. To protect against impersonation, we're actually going to include digital certificates. This is because the digital certificate binds the public key of its owner with its owner, and that owner being an individual, or if it is a system or a queue manager or a some type of application or some other entity, these digital certificates are known as public key certificates. And that's because they give you the assurance that the ownership of the public key, when you use asymmetric key scheme, the digital certificate contains the public key for an entity and is the statement that that public key belongs to that entity, in which typically what you do is you will send your certificates. You will send a request to a certificate authority, and that request going to that authority will allow them to create this certificate for you. And when you've created your request, and we'll talk about these a little later, that you retain your private key, and then the public key is the one that's coming back from the certificate authority. Okay, so when the certificate is from an individual entity, the certificate is called a personal certificate or user certificate. But when the certificate is from the certificate authority, that certificate is called the certificate authority certificate, or another name is signer certificate. In which case, certificates now are adding to what we're going to do with secure sockets layer. So if we go to screen number 8, another thing that certificate authorities do is they make sure that if they suspect something has happened to one of the certificates, they will put that certificate on what's called a certificate revocation list. Basically, certificates, if they think they've been exposed or possibly someone received the certificate who should not have received it, they will put the certificate on a certificate revocation list. Certificates also have certain valid dates on them. Date it's valid from to the date it's valid to, in which case, outside of those dates, certificates are no longer trusted again. So when we're using SSL, another function of SSL is you could be checking certificate authority lists, in which case you would, and it's optional, you don't have to do that, but it is something that can be done when using SSL certificates. Okay, let's go to screen number 9. And on a certificate, on this certificate, when you're creating a certificate, typically there's a format that needs to be used with the certificates. And the support this format is defined by the X509 standard, in which case there's a common name. And this common name on this one, for this demonstration here, we're using like QManager1, so this would be related to like WebSphere MQ. Organization is IBM. The organizational unit would be like test system. The location may be Atlanta. The country is the U.S. And these are just parts of the distinguished name that goes on the certificate. Now, other information on the certificate in the common name could be used also to ensure that the string is correct on the certificate, and this can also be checked when you're using certificates between systems, and that is also optional, or sometimes it's mandatory depending on the system that's being used. Let's go on now to screen number 10. Basically, in screen number 10, we're starting to put this together. So we're going to take this encryption. We've encrypted, so we started with our asymmetric and symmetric encryptions, and we went to our message authentication codes and the others. So with SSL, when we set up an SSL session, we're going to have a encryption algorithm that will be specified. We're going to use a hash function that's going to be specified for use when generating our message digest, which is our message authentication code. This combination of the encryption as well as the message authentication code is called a cipher spec. With the cipher spec, we're also going to take the cipher spec and we're going to use that with an authentication key exchange. We're going to call it a cipher suite. Okay, the SSL session needs to know what this algorithm is going to be. So for the authentication and the key exchange, there are several different available key exchanges, but RSA algorithm is the most widely used. When you combine the authentication and key exchange algorithm with the cipher spec, this is what's called the cipher suite. The three distinct algorithms used for the cipher suite are the key exchange and authentication algorithm used during the SSL handshake, the encryption algorithm used to encode the data, and the message authentication code algorithm, which is used to generate the message digest. There are several options on each component of the suite, but only certain combinations are valid with a specified SSL connection. The name of a valid cipher suite defines the combination of algorithms used. For example, if you have a cipher suite that's called SSL underscore RSA underscore with underscore RCA underscore 128 underscore MD5, this says that RSA is the key exchange and authentication algorithm. The RC4 encryption algorithm uses a 128-bit key. And the MD5 is the message authentication code algorithm, in which case the cipher suite identifies the combination of the encryption algorithm and the MAC algorithm that's being used. Both ends of an SSL connection must agree to the same cipher spec that's being set up and able to communicate. Otherwise, they will not communicate. So with that said, let's go on to screen number 11. And here are a variety of cipher specs. The cipher specs, first we have for encryption the block ciphers, which is RC2, DES, triple DES, and AES. These are all encryptions available. A cipher spec on the side, you can notice on the right-hand side, so we'd have like null MD5, null SHA, and you notice the hash functions over on the left, bottom left there, SHA and MD5 are both hash functions used for the message authentication code, in which case this would be the different cipher specs you may see, RC4 underscore MD5 underscore export, RC4 MD5 underscore US. RC2 is a block cipher algorithm from RSA Data Security Incorporated, and it incorporates or encrypts data by block, basically 8 bytes, and it has a key length of 40 bits, 64 bits, or 126 bits. RCA is also from, or RC4 is also from RSA, and this is a stream cipher algorithm, and it operates on each byte of data as opposed to blocks of data and has a length of 40, 64, or 128 bits. DES is actually a older U.S. data encryption standard. It's a block cipher algorithm, and it operates on 8 bytes, has a key length of 56 bits. Triple DES is a variation of DES and has a key length of 168 bits. In order of fastest to slowest, the fastest encryption is RC4, DES, RC2, and triple DES. So triple DES is the slowest, meaning it takes the longest to encrypt. AES is Advanced Encryption Standard. That's a new U.S. standard that's being used. This is also a block cipher algorithm of 16-byte-long blocks. These key lengths include 128 and 256 bits. There are basically two choices, again, for the hash algorithms, for the hash functions to be used with the cipher specs. The SHA, which is Secure Hash Algorithm, and the MD5, which is Message Digest Version 5. And the choice between MD5 and SHA is a trade between security and performance. SHA produces a 160-bit output, and the MD5 produces a 128-bit output, in which case MD5 is faster in calculating the message digest. And that pretty well covers most of the cipher specs that you will probably see in most SSL communications. Let's move on to screen number 12. Basically, in the secure sockets layer, secure sockets itself is a protocol used for to allow the transmission of secure data over basically an insecure network or any network. SSL is common across ZOS, Unix, Windows, iSeries systems. SSL is an industry standard protocol for secure communications involving encryption, authentication, and integrity of your data. SSL is supported in both client-server and server-to-server type of incorporation. If you're using WebSphere MQ, it would be basically from queue manager to queue manager. If you're using regular communications, it would be basically client-to-server or server-to-server. There are a lot of flexible capabilities built in, including the ability to select who you are prepared to accept communications from, based on their fully authenticated identity. It's widely accepted in the internet community and has been subject to significant testing by the hacker community. To prevent eavesdropping, how do I stop someone from seeing the information I send? Or to prevent impersonation, how do we detect if somebody has intercepted my information? Well, we use SSL for all of this. And that's why the Secure Sockets layer has been basically the de facto industry standard for communications. So with that said, let's take a look at the SSL handshake that is involved. So we'll go to screen number 13. On screen number 13, when you are going to start up communications with an entity, which would be a server basically, you would have, in this sample we're using here, I'm showing Queue Manager on the left, Queue Manager on the right. Queue Managers, as in WebSphere MQ, it could also be a client to a server or a server to a server. Basically, the Queue Manager on the left, Queue Manager 1, sends a hello. He sends a hello. He sends a hello and some random text. This hello, being as Queue Manager 1 on the left, is the side who begins the transmission, is always considered the client in an SSL connection. Whoever initiates the connection is the client in any SSL communication, in which case Queue Manager 1 on the left sends a hello and some random text to Queue Manager 2 on the right, in which case he also is going to send the cipher specs and the compression method he expects to communicate with Queue Manager 2. And again, Queue Manager 1 is the client in this case. Let's move on to screen number 14. Once Queue Manager 2 has received this hello, Queue Manager 2 will then send back a hello back to Queue Manager 1, and he'll send back some random text also. This random text is going to be used to calculate the encryption for this session that we're going to be using here. So this random text does make a difference here, is going to be used. So Queue Manager 2 now sends back to Queue Manager 1 some random text. Queue Manager 2 then chooses or agrees to the cipher spec and the compression method that Queue Manager 1 sent in the original hello. Sometimes, depending on the systems, they could send each other a list of acceptable cipher specs and compression methods, or they send only one specific cipher spec and compression method. Depends on the system that's being used. Anyway, Queue Manager 2 sends back his server certificate. And in this case, he's also going to request the client certificate from Queue Manager 1. Client certificate request is usually optional, but in some instances, it is a mandatory request. So it depends on the systems that are being used, whether it's optional or not. Let's move on to screen number 15. On screen number 15, you can see the SSL client is going to verify the digital certificate of the server certificate that came from Queue Manager 2. He's going to verify that. He's going to decrypt it using the certificate authority's public key. This public key was distributed with, in the case of WebSphere MQ, public keys are distributed with WebSphere MQ. So all systems have the public keys. And they can verify that the certificate authority of the certificate that was sent over by Queue Manager 2 is a trusted certificate authority. In this case, Queue Manager 1 is also going to check the domain name and the distinguished name, or he could check the distinguished name of Queue Manager 2. He can check the domain name and or the distinguished name, so he can also verify through those, these are on the certificate, that this certificate coming from Queue Manager 2 is valid. He also receives Queue Manager 2's public key. In this transmission, it came over from Queue Manager 2. He receives the public key at this time. Now let's move on to screen number 16. In screen number 16, you'll notice that the client key is exchange at this point. Queue Manager 1 has verified that Queue Manager 2 is valid, is trusted. Queue Manager 1 at this time will send his secret key over to Queue Manager 2. This secret key has now been sent over with his certificate because the certificate was requested by Queue Manager 2, and it's encrypted in Queue Manager 2's public key there, and he sends the certificate, in which case, now if you'll notice, we have switched that Queue Manager 1 and Queue Manager 2, since Queue Manager 1 sent his secret key to Queue Manager 2, we are going to go into symmetric encryption at this time. All this time, up to now, we've been doing asymmetric encryption. Now we're going to drop into symmetric encryption, and if you remember, symmetric encryption is quite fast compared to asymmetric encryption. So let's move on to screen number 17. In screen number 17, this is the final of the handshake. We have now verified the client certificate. So Queue Manager 2 verifies the client certificate, and he decrypts using the certificate authority's public key. They now have verified both sides. And if we move to screen number 18, you will see we are now in a private messaging, doing private messaging using the secret key, which is now symmetric encryption, and we can send the information back and forth. It's a secure line. We are now able to move our data at the fastest speed possible, encrypting it, and both sides are trusted to each other. Now, one of the things to realize in an SSL connection at this point, we now have a secure line. This line has been encrypted using this one-time key, using this one-time encryption based on the random text that was sent back and forth between the two entities, in which case, at this point, this encryption session is using a single generated encryption for this session. So most of the time in SSL communications, you do not want to leave a session running for long periods of time, and by long periods I'm saying leave it up for hours or days or weeks, because if somebody were sniffing the line and capturing your packets, and they were fast enough to be able to decrypt your encryption, they could then break in and see what your messages are as they're going back and forth. So most SSL communications should be changing the encryption at a relatively high rate, in which case somebody who is capturing packets would not be able to decrypt them before the encryption had changed again. And this is normal in most SSL, that the encryption does change between the entities so that we don't have a constant emulation, constant encryption of the same encryption going on. Okay, let's go to screen number 19. One of the things we talked about that you should realize is when you do get a certificate from a certificate authority, or when you are exchanging certificates, sometimes you have to move that certificate to other systems because it's not on the system that you're going to receive it on. You may have to receive a certificate and then you need to send it to another entity or another system. When you transfer certificates, lots of times people transfer them by FTP. Ensure that when you're in moving certificates with FTP that you're using the correct format, because if you transfer the certificates in the wrong format, they could be corrupted. If you'll notice on this screen here, the top certificate is bad because it's got it has additional carriage returns at the end of the line that should not be there. Those carriage returns were added because that certificate was transferred in the wrong format. It might have been transferred in ASCII versus binary, and it should have been done in the opposite. Basically, certificates that are DER type certificates, or PKCS7 or PKCS12 type certificates should be FTP'd, if you're going to FTP them, in binary format. If you're doing PEM or Privacy Enhanced Mail, PEM type certificates or base 64 encoded X509 certificates, those are typically transmitted in ASCII format. So if, once you've transmitted a certificate request and you need to get it back from a certificate authority, be sure that you're not transmitting it in the wrong way, because things could be added like these carriage returns. If you have a good hex editor, you could edit this certificate with a hex editor to remove the 0DX characters, which are basically carriage returns, replace them with 40X characters, which are basically blanks, and this certificate should be fine. I'm sure once you look at a certificate, if you look at it with an editor, be careful, because some editors will add characters, formatting characters, which you definitely do not want to pick up. So you want to use something that won't add characters to it on you. Okay, let's take a look at some other things that happened with SSL 2. Let's look at screen number 20. And in screen number 20, if you'll notice, this is four separate systems here. And in this case, we are using self-signed certificates, so we're not using certificate authority certificates. One of the problems with you doing self-signed certificates for all of your systems is that, if you'll notice, every system, if they're going to communicate, has to have a copy of every other system's self-signed certificate. They all have to have the same set of certificates in order to authenticate each other. This could be very difficult to manage if you have a lot of systems. For testing purposes, it works great, though, because self-signed certificates are easily generated. You can generate them yourself if you have a certificate generating system, like if you have iKeyman, or if you have a digital certificate manager from iSeries, or ZOS RACF, they can generate certificates and generate self-signed certificates. But this, what we're looking at here, is typically a problem people run into if they're using self-signed certificates on all their systems. They've got a large number of systems. Then they're going to have to manage all of these certificates on all their systems. If we look at screen number 21, this is if you're using certificate authority certificates, which is what most people do. This saves you from having to distribute your certificates to all your systems, as typically the certificate authority certificate is on all the systems, and only the personal CA signed certificate needs to be on each individual system. That's a lot easier to manage. So this is just some information I wanted to include so that you would see the difference between using all self-signed or if you use certificate authority certificates. Okay. At this time, let's go to page 22. And on page 22, this chart here includes links to a number of sites that provide a lot of valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to a webcast like this one or conference information. And if you want to visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information, that's also available. IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up on the learning curve quickly. And the ESR tool is available to Passport Advantage clients to open and update and view PMRs, problem management records, online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for the weekly email updates and of products of interest to you. And if we go to page 23, I'm going to turn this session back over to Christy.
Thank you, Russ. And that was a great presentation. And at this point, Connie, we would like to open the lines for questions. I will now turn the call over to Russ Sandcliff.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically today. And we'll take our first question from Sarah McGrath from IBM.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. When you say that the public certificate should be installed on all systems, how does that get there?
Typically, the public certificate, or you're talking about the certificate authority public certificate?
Right.
Yeah, typically when systems are shipped, they actually include a lot of these certificate authority certificates with them. When you load, say, Windows XP Internet Explorer on a PC, If you look in the certificates that come with Internet Explorer, there all of those certificates are already there from VeriSign and several different companies that provide certificate authority functions to people. They are the certificate authorities, and they're typically there. If not, if you're going to be your own certificate authority, like a system, an iSeries or a ZOS system could be a certificate authority system. You could be your own certificate authority. In that case, you would have to create a certificate authority root certificate, and then you would have to distribute it or get it, pass it to these other systems, and someone would have to install it in a certificate database on that system. So, but normally, most systems, and when we ship systems as IBM, when we ship products, we ship a set of certificate authority certificates with the products. So they're typically already there in most cases.
I'm a system administrator on AIX.
Uh-huh.
5.2, I install middleware on there, and I think that I would have to get the root certificate from, say, VeriSign to put on AIX. I don't think it would.
What type of middleware, like, product are you thinking of?
For either MQ Series or WebSphere Interchange Server.
Yeah, with WebSphere MQ, we do ship certificates with that. So when you set up an SSL session between queue managers, if you look in your... if you look in the certificate database for that MQ, they're already there.
And would you have to install the GS kit or just the SSL file sets to get that? Or would
if you're going to use SSL, you need to put on your GSK kit. Yeah.
And then you would have a repository that came.
Yeah.
With that.
Yes.
Okay.
It does. We ship it with it. Yep.
Thank you.
So hopefully you're already covered.
Okay.
And we'll go next to Dick Riley from the state of North Carolina.
The question is, how does AES level encryption compare with TLS?
TLS, basically TLS, Transport Layer Security, AES encryption, it's a new standard. It's basically blocks. It would be the encryption you'd probably be using in lieu of the DES, probably. How does it compare with TLS? You know, that's a good question, Dick. I'm not really sure on that. I'll probably have to get back to you on that one.
Okay.
AES is quite relatively new. And how does it compare with TLS? I'm not sure what the comparison might be for that.
So I'm just wondering if this AES level is going to be supported with host on demand?
You know, I'm not sure if it's going to be supported. I'll have to look at the different levels or the different... supported versions that go with host on demand. Most of it's RCA, a lot of it's RSA type encryption, because AES is basically block cipher algorithm. So I'm not sure if we want to use block or not, but I'll have to just take a look at that.
You may also send an email to Russ, and it's rrstancl@us.ibm.com.
It appears there are no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to Ms. Snyder for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Connie. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation as well. We hope you'll join us for more presentations. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Russ, for presenting today.
And this concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation.